Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This piece was published on the 26th of February, 2022, and is entitled Long Links. Welcome to another curation of long-form pieces, the kind of thing that I, as a semi-retired person, have time for. While you probably don't have the space for all of these, one or two might reward an investment of your attention. These are obviously grim times, and indeed there's grim stuff here, but I've tried to add some smiles for balance. The world's terrible, but there's great new music being created all the time. Let's start with a palate-clearing blast of excellent hard rock from the EQD Japan All-Stars. It's actually a promo for Earthquake Devices, that's the EQD, who make guitar effects. It's called the Reincarnation Rose Session, and that's a link to a YouTube video, featuring Japanese woman metalistas Wata from Boris, Tokie, Sugar Yoshinaga, and Yuka Yoshimura, the latter two of Metal Chicks. I cannot lie, I have always been attracted to women with large amplifiers. What a great song, and the drumming is out of this world. Next up, Sierra Farrell sings Bells of Every Chapel, another YouTube link. I just discovered Mrs. Farrell a few weeks ago and have tickets to her upcoming Vancouver show. She's sort of halfway between Dolly Parton and Leon Redbone, and she's wonderful. By the way, did you know that there's a Guitar Girls magazine? That's a link. And just to be fair to the old guy demographic, check out Welcome Back from Neil Young's recent Barn project. What a pretty and reassuring sound the band makes. We're all weeping for Kyiv. There's been a few background pieces about the place when there's not a war on. The one I read was Kyiv's Ancient Normality Redux by Timothy Snyder. Boy, does it ever have a lot of history. Some of it's even happy. And just to be clear, Vladimir Putin can eat shit and die. Also on my shit list are the opinionators ranging from Jacobin on the left to various GOP hacks on the right saying, yes, Putin bad, but we have to acknowledge that it's mostly our fault because NATO is bad too, and also we're too woke. People who start land wars in Europe deserve eternal torment in the hell I don't believe in, and their apologists are standing on perilous ground. Since we're talking about unhappy zones, let's look at Israel-Palestine. The Israelis finally managed to rid themselves of that scuzzbag Netanyahu, but the voters there overwhelmingly prefer far-right parties of various flavors, whereby various flavors I mean the spectrum between ethno-nationalist and stone racist. Prime Minister Bennett is trying to shrink the conflict, that's in quotes, by improving Palestinian lives but never, never talking about the bigger Palestinian future issue. Over at Israel Policy Forum, Michael J. Koplow asks, and this is a link, if someone shrinks a conflict but nobody sees it, has it been shrunk? Which explains in erudite detail why this isn't working that well. In particular, there seems to have been an upsurge of settler-on-Palestinian violence. Over at Plus 972, I should note that Plus 972 is an online publication about Israel politics and life, because 972 is the country code for Israel. Meron Rappaport asks, link, what's behind the Israeli right's renewed war on Palestinian citizens? Going way deeper into Israeli political dynamics than, well, anything that's written outside Israel, it's gotten to the point where Amnesty International released a report using the word apartheid to describe the situation in the West Bank. At Religion Dispatches, Joshua Shaines offers, link, rather than attack Amnesty for labeling Israel an apartheid state, critics could address the actual problems. As you can guess from the title, he's not happy. What with COVID in Russia, that part of the world has pretty well fallen out of the news, but the problems don't seem to be going away. In my own country, Canada, the big story, of course, was the protesting truckers and their freedom convoy, which caught our ruling class entirely by surprise. It took the authorities a big 4 weeks to get organized and free up the streets of Ottawa. It was pleasing that they managed it with astonishingly little violence. Now that we know the approach works, I expect it to be applied to demonstrations which are led by Indigenous people and other marginalized communities, as opposed to good old boys. There's a pretty decent write-up, that's a link, by Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times, published about 15 minutes before the cops waded in. Here's another take by Canadian finance real estate blogger Garth Turner, entitled In the Crosshairs, that's a link. It explores the interesting and I think genuinely new intersections of class and culture and politics that are storing up North America. Let me quote, but have you noticed the demographics? Yep, mostly white, mostly guys. On the surface, this may be centered around vaccines and freedoms, but it's really about disenfranchising and exclusion. COVID has exacerbated the wealth divide. The white-collar work-from-home crowd has been in the bedroom, employed, tapping on a laptop for 2 years, watching their real estate equity grow. The rest have been handed the dirty end of the stick. On top of this economic injustice are governments whose diversity and inclusion policies have favored certain groups, women, indigenous, racialized, while others, like white dudes in trucks, feel left out. Have you seen a TV commercial for a Canadian bank lately that portrays such a person? Me neither. End of quote. The appeal to bank commercials makes sense in Canada, whose economy is dominated by five insanely profitable, too-big-to-fail ones. These institutions advertise like hell on TV all the time, and the ads are sort of the future liberals want. All the families are either multiracial or gay, or both, which is to say they work hard on avoiding all the isms, including ableism, good on them, and being inclusive, which is totally fine by me, and in fact what it looks like around my family dinner table these days. Of course, the people who run the banks also don't look like the people in those ads. It doesn't bother me that people who look like me never appear. We had our run in the sun. But the absence is kind of striking, and I can see how it might bother someone who is also getting fucked over by current economic trends. Not that I sympathize with the truckies in the slightest. They combine incoherence with ignorance and bigotry. But when something doesn't make sense, I want to understand it better. Another symptom of that same malaise is the propensity of people to believe big lies in general and the big lie about the 2020 U.S. election in particular. Over at 538, link, there is more than one big lie, dives deep not just on the fact of the lie, but on the fine belief structures and their dynamics. I thought it was fascinating. Speaking of good deep dives from 538, here are two more. Link, Democrats helped build the social safety net. Why are many now against expanding it? And, link, why Democrats keep losing culture wars. Both useful examinations of extremely puzzling evidence. These days, when you think of big lies, you also think of cryptocurrencies and NFTs and so on. Now here's a treat. Yanis Varoufakis on crypto and the left, and techno-feudalism. That's a link. Varoufakis is one of the world's really interesting people and very economically literate. In this interview, he explains why, even if the crypto technology was good, which it isn't, and even if the people pushing it had integrity, which they don't, the whole thing doesn't make sense in the context of the current landscape of egregious inequality and class war. I think the whole crypto NFT thing is nauseating, but it's not the worst problem we have with online culture. That would be the torrent of abusiveness directed at various outgroups, in particular women. Let's turn the mic over to Aubrey Hirsch's That's How It Works When You're a Woman on the Internet. That's a link. I suspect that most readers here know about the bad stuff that's happening out there, but let's never forget it or wave it aside or stop looking for ways to bring it to a fucking halt already. Humanity can be better than this. As I type the words you are now reading, or in fact read the words you are now listening to, I am engaging in internet-mediated authoring, which is still in its infancy and we don't understand it very well. I think the subject is fascinating and enjoyed the hell out of Andre Mir's Social Media Emancipated Authors, But to What End? That's a link. It includes a taxonomy of types of internet authors, and I bet anyone reading this or listening to it would identify with one or more types: flickering author, silent author, interjectional author, commenting author, emitting author, principal author. But publishing, like most things, is all about money. Brian Morrissey in, link, The Rich Niche, discovers that most of the innovative-looking new media projects have something in common. They're seeking an audience that is described as sophisticated or literate or insider and various other euphemisms for has lots of money. Interesting, with ideas on alternatives, too. Please bear in mind that I'm a geek by profession and taste, and if you're not, please skip to the next paragraph. Mark Brooker, one of the really smart people over at AWS, has been lighting things up over at his blog. Consider, will circuit breakers solve my problems? That's a link. Software deployment, speed and safety, another. And DynamoDB's best feature, predictability, another. All recommended. I also enjoyed Evan Martin's Rethinking Errors, Warnings, and Lints, which addresses the question, should you block dev builds on compiler warnings? And offers a good answer. Finally, for those who want a really deep dive, let me recommend Russ Cox's excellent piece from 2007. Regular expression matching can be simple and fast, but is slow in Java, Perl, PHP, Python, and Ruby. And this remains my single favorite piece of exposition around a core piece of both theoretical computer science and practical software engineering. Let's end up on a note of reassurance. Have you been having trouble understanding the dialogue in the movies and serials that you watch? Think it might be because you're getting old? Well, it might be, but it also turns out that there really is an epidemic of lousy, inaudible dialogue. I was overjoyed when I read, link, here's why movie dialogue has gotten more difficult to understand and three ways to fix it. I'm pretty old, but I thought my hearing was still good, and maybe I'm right. In fact, this has become such a common piece of conventional wisdom that The New Yorker has a cartoon series, Things Easier to Understand, or pardon me, Things Easier to Hear Than Movie Dialogue. For example, Worm Fart. We can all use a smile. And that's all, folks.